I'm broadcasting the show today from Chicago, where voters this week went to the polls to decide who will replace Mayor Rahm Emanuel. None of the 14 candidates on the ballot Tuesday got a majority of the vote, so it goes to a runoff on April 2nd between the top two vote-getters, two African-American women. One is attorney Lori Lightfoot. The other is Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Both candidates cast themselves as reformers who would tackle corruption at City Hall. The issue took on an urgency in this election after a major scandal threetened to take down some of the city's most powerful aldermen.
I've been under investigation in the past. Nothing has ever come of it, and I've always cooperated.
That's Ed Burke, the longest-serving alderman on the Chicago City Council. Just months ago, FBI agents raided his offices and filed a criminal complaint charging him with attempted extortion. He's become a symbol to some of Chicago's culture of corruption.
Picture this, and many cities have someone like Ed Burke.
This is Joe Ferguson, the Inspector General of Chicago.
He's been an alderman for 50 years. He inherited his father's seat, his father who was an alderman who died at a tragically young age. Ed Burke was a young cop at the time. He was given his father's seat, and he's been in the city council for 50 years. And for 35 of those years, the chair of the most powerful committee in the city council, the Committee on Finance, which actually controls most of the resources of the city council, and where all of the major cost-affecting legislation needs to pass through. So an enormous amount of power held in one person for a long period of time. Ed recently has been preliminarily charged in what has been clearly signaled as a larger investigation on something that's very, very old school Chicago corruption, utilizing that appearance, if not fact, of ward-level aldermanic control over all business affairs that are passing through or could be conducted in that jurisdiction to basically extort from the owner of a Burger King in his ward the promise to provide Burke's law firm, which specializes in tax appeals, with tax appeal business going forward. So the classic quid pro quo.
So how much of your time are you now having to spend on the Ed Burke situation?
If I answered that question, I'd have to kill you. it's a meaningful component of what's driving our work on the investigative side right now.
And what do you think it says about Chicago right now?
I'm going to take a somewhat Pollyannish view. The very fact of the outing of this and some other significant controversies around aldermen and the public's reaction to it situates Chicago at one of those paradigm-shifting moments and its confluence with an election at a point in time that the city still has to grapple with significant fiscal issues because of a pension crisis both locally and at the state level. Means that this corruption moment is one that actually could matter. And I would say it's so significant right now, and it's such a factor in the election that if the shift doesn't come as a result of the election, I'm not sure what's ever going to make it change.
It's hardly the first time scandal has rocked Chicago government. David Greising is president of the Better Government Association, a local watchdog group. In the 1980s, the FBI indicted 92 officials in an undercover sting known as Operation Greylord.
That was judges who were taking bribes in order to fix court cases.
There was Silver Shovel from the 90s. What was that one?
That was payments being made in order to be able to do city business.
And then there was hired truck.
The city would use trucks from private contractors, and in order to get that business, those private contractors would have to pay a bribe to somebody in the Department of Streets and Sanitation.
Greising says it's not just corrupt individuals that are the problem. There are also aspects of how city government is structured in Chicago that allow corruption to fester. Many aldermen, like Burke, have lucrative side businesses that create potential conflicts of interest with their duties as a public servant. And then there's what's called aldermanic privilege.
Right. Aldermanic privilege is a convention of the city council in Chicago. It's not written into the ordinances or anything. It basically says that the aldermen of any of the 50 wards in Chicago have an unchallenged right to veto anything that might happen in the ward. What we've seen with the Burke charge is just how important that aldermanic privilege is, that Burke basically knew that the Burger King investors needed to come to him in order to get their permits approved. And without that approval, that Burger King store doesn't get the new driveway mm-hmm. and the interior improvements that they needed to make. And you imagine that multiplied by thousands of times that anytime anybody needs a construction permit anywhere in the city, they need to go on bended knee to the alderman and get the alderman's approval. And if the alderman is honest and is just looking out for the good of the people in his or her ward, that's awesome. That's good representative government. If the alderman is a little bit corrupt, a little bit tempted to kind of make some money off of mm-hmm. that piece of power that he or she has, that is the formula for deep-seated corruption in city council.
In your years trying to fight corruption in the city, do you come across people who say, maybe it's good for the city of Chicago to have this kind of thing because these people are able to get things done? There's a good side to this sort of way of doing business.
I'm not sure people see it as being a good thing. I think they see it at the very best, maybe a necessary evil, that this is the price you have to pay to do business. I don't think they go so far as to say, oh, yeah, it's the price you have to pay, and that's good. They see it as something that's unavoidable. And one of the interesting things about the Burke case was that these were investors from Houston. They didn't know the way things work here. They didn't know all the unwritten rules of how you get things done. And so they kept pushing back over a course of months and even more than a year. They kept saying, well, why should we have to kind of hire this guy's law firm in order to just get a permit on our restaurant? So you saw an outsider being shocked by the way this happens, whereas people who are used to this just say, well, that's the price of doing business.
Maybe it's the price of doing business, but there's a cost for the city. Joe Ferguson, the inspector general, says you can draw a straight line from the culture of corruption here to some of Chicago's most pressing issues, like violent crime.
It's unquestionably holding back the state. You ask people of their impressions of Chicago, and I think two things come to mind right now: corruption and violent crime, gun violence. And what corruption does is it is a huge inhibiting factor to the development of business, to people coming to the community, to people building businesses in the community that expand the tax base, that expand opportunity that's necessary in order to sort of cut into those forces that end up resulting in the cycle of violence and the continuation of the cycle of segregation. So absolutely, corruption is a huge factor.
How corrupt is this city in 2019?
More corrupt than it realized it was in 2018. You know, what happens with corruption is you sort of go through these sinusoidal cycles of scandal and so-called reform. The reforms tend to happen in a reactionary way at the margin. Maybe you bring in some new people, whether it's elected officials or people at the head of agencies that had been affected by corruption that appear to have all of the credentials of reformers. But in point of fact, the number 2, 3, 4, 5 person, they're all the old guard, and they make sure the reformer doesn't really go too far afield. And in Chicago, culturally, Chicagoans actually, I think, are in love with their corruption narrative. And if you read the local newspapers, every corruption story gets connected up to the history, right? It's a rogues gallery, and we love our rogues, and we love that narrative. Sometimes it's good for us at the local level. It means that we can get our extra garbage picked up when we're tossing our furniture in the alley, and other times it means it's costing us more. So we have a very complicated relationship, love-hate relationship with corruption in Chicago.
For David Greising of the Better Government Association, Chicago's reputation for corruption isn't something to be proud of.
Unfortunately, we have this reputation. I think we've done enough to earn the reputation. There is a perverse sense of civic pride in this terrible reputation we have. I don't share in that pride. I'm disgusted by it. I want to see it change. I think there are a lot of people who feel that way. And seeing Ed Burke, the most powerful alderman in the city council, go down is just a reminder of how serious the problems are that we're dealing with.
Do you think that you'll ever be able to say, we did it, we ended corruption in the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois?
Okay, the Better Government Association was started in 1923 when Al Capone basically ran City Hall. And we've been at it for 95 years. And something tells me that even after the Ed Burke scandal, there still may be more work to be done.
Statistics from the Department of Justice show that more than 1,700 people were convicted of public corruption in the Northern District of Illinois between 1976 and 2017. Political scientists at the University of Illinois Chicago rank Chicago the most corrupt city in the country and Illinois the third most corrupt state. Still, Ed Burke, who faces up to 20 years in prison if convicted of extortion, just won his re-election bid to a 13th term this week with 53% of the vote. He called it a great day.